Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Even today is my complaint rebellion. My stroke is heavier than my groaning, said Job and said Richard Wright, whose literary bombshell, Native Son, placed him among the foremost American authors, and whose autobiography, Back Boy, told of the slow growth and the rebellion of a Native Son against a crippling environment. In today's chapter, Destination Freedom tells the story of Black Boy.
I was the son of black peasants who had shifted from the Mississippi Delta to the Mississippi City, who had known the nightmare of mob madness, who had had hunger to push his stomach until his head ached, and who had come to the age of 19 and had just finished grade school, and whose mother wanted to see him start life right.
Shut the door, Mrs. I want to talk.
What is it, Mama?
I'm worried about you, son. I'm worried because you don't seem to get along with people. And somehow you've got to live here and work and help me. I'm ill.
I know, Mama. I'm trying.
Try harder. It's your home, son. This is where you're going to live, maybe for the rest of your days. You've got to change. Get along with folks. I'm worried about you.
Now, don't worry about me, Mama. I'll get along. I had said that 100 times. And as before, there followed the empty days of wonder at myself and the world I was in. The days when the sun heated the pavements until they felt like the tops of oven. And I went from one small job to another.
What's your name?
Richard Wright.
You're from up north, huh?
I'm from right around here in Jackson.
About you, stands for it. Well, I get it, Daddy. Now, you use the store as a bicycle for your end. Come when you're called, go where you're sent. Learn to respect your superior. Yeah, boy, take this over to Maxon Street and hurry back. You haven't learned manners yet. You learn.
I didn't understand what he meant, but understanding was not long in coming. It came as I was riding back to the store. My bicycle tire sprung a leak. I was leading along the hot, dusty road when a car came alongside.
Hey, boy, what's up with you?
I looked up, saw a car filled with white men from the city.
Yeah, too bad. If I spoke you, boy. You're going to town, hop on the running board. We're going that way. Yeah.
I got on, clutched hard at my bike with one hand and clung to the side of the car with the other.
I'm holding.
And I'll pass around the flask, will you, boy? The car was speeding. The men passed around the flask, gobbled down the fire, and became merrier and merrier. And one leaned out of the window and asked me,
"Hey, boy, how about drink, huh?"
I laughed and said, No, not me. No.
What'd you say?
I said, no. Something hard smacked me between the eyes. I saw stars and fell backward off the car. I sprawled in the dust of the road, my feet entangled in the steel spokes of the bicycle. The car stopped. And the white man got out and stood over me.
Boy, ain't you learn no better session, eh?
I told you he was uppity. I could tell.
Get up, Black Boy.
What's the matter?
You know good and well what's the matter. Ain't you
learned
to say, sir,
to
white man yet, ain't you?
It then occurred to me that I had refused the drink and said simply, no.
I've got a notion to take it to your jerk and teach you a proper manner.
No, let's leave him alone. Ain't got time for no teaching. Now, boy, you were lucky you said that to nice, kind, forgiving white folks like us. Otherwise, you'd be on your way to the grave. You reckon you've learned enough to ride right now?
I'd... Yeah, but walk.
You can go ahead and walk, right, boys. Walk your legs off. You'll learn quicker that way.
I was learning very quickly. I tried hard to conceal my feelings as I watched the brutality around me and avoided the eyes of the boss, but even this disturbed me.
Black boy.
Yes, sir?
Lift your head. Look at me.
He said, look. And I looked long and hard into his gray eyes with my brown eyes. He looked away, but he said,
why don't you act like you're enjoying yourself? Ain't you happy on this job?
Yes, sir. It's wonderful.
So why don't you ever laugh, have a good time? Where's your sense of humor?
Don't you ever see nothing funny?
Yes, sir. I can laugh just like other colored folks. Only there's so much that's funny that...
Well?
If I started laughing, I might not be able to stop. My old man, sir, he laughed himself to death. He looked puzzled for an instant. Then wheeled, walked to the front of the store and came back and peeled off three $15 bills. My week's wages.
I don't like your looks, Black Boy. I never did. You're the worst imp ever imposed on the good-natured, kind white folks. Pick up your money. Get out.
I picked up my money. Got out. And when hunger twisted my stomach again, I sought the advice of my friend, Griggs, whom I found washing windows outside a jeweler's.
Trouble with you, Dick, is that you just don't understand what they try to tell you.
What's that, Griggs?
Try and tell you it's a white folks' country.
Oh.
Yeah. Not for all the white folks, naturally. But them that got here fussed with the most of gold. Yeah. Yeah, them on top gotta have somebody to hold them up there, sir. That's what you and the poor white folks is for.
Don't you understand, boy? You, you black.
I understand that.
Yeah, well, then act like it. Be humble, boy, be humble. The book say the meek shall inherit the earth.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I'll watch myself.
Yeah, you do that. There's an optical company upstairs, and the boss is a Yankee from Brooklyn.
Yeah?
Named Crane. Say he wants to break a colored boy in on the optical trade.
Mm-hmm.
Pays only $8 a week, but a trade's a trade. Now listen, when I gives you the word to go up there, you watch your step. It's your big chance, boy. Act humble-like.
When the word came, my hopes shot high. I went up to see Mr. Crane, and I practiced being humble and saying yes, sir, and no, sir, so white folks wouldn't know I suspected I was as good as they. And then I was before Mr. Crane, and he looked me over and said,
I've been wanting to train the Negro boys since I came down south. Follow me to the shop.
He took me to the rear of the building where there was a small factory filled with strange machines smeared with red dust and with two white workmen bending over them. Mr. Crane called to the men.
Peace? Yes. Reynolds?
Yes, sir.
I want you to meet Richard Wright. He'll work with us hereafter.
Oh, I see.
What'll he do?
He'll break him into the routine of the shop here. Start him from the bottom, carry him to the top. Show him the mechanics of grinding and polishing lenses, understand?
They nodded their heads, glanced at each other, went back to their machines.
Now, boy, clean up this place and get ready to learn.
I swept, mopped, dusted, ran errands, and in idle minutes watched the two white men grinding lenses on the machines. Neither spoke. Months passed, and I was still sweeping. One afternoon, I walked up to Reynolds and said, I wonder if you'd tell me about your work there.
Tell you what?
Like Mr. Crane said about learning.
What are you trying to do? Get smart, black boy?
No, sir. I was baffled. I thought perhaps he'd gotten up on the wrong side of the bed.
So I went over to the other worker and reminded him of what the boss had said.
Black boy? You think you're white, don't you?
Oh, no, sir.
You don't act like it.
But Mr. Crane said
this is a white man's work, black boy. You don't want to get in no trouble. Keep to that broom and watch yourself.
I stuck to the broom. I hid my resentment under a nervous, cryptic smile. But one summer day, Peace called me to his workbench.
Come here, Richard. I want to ask you something.
I had to go between two narrow benches and stand with my back to a wall in order to get to where he was.
Yes, sir? Come here, Randall, and witness this.
Yeah, go on, Peace, ask him. See if I ain't right.
Richard? Reynolds tells me that you call me Peace.
I stiffened. I knew this was a showdown. I looked at Reynolds. He was gripping a steel bar. I opened my mouth to speak to assure Peace. I'd never called him simply Peace, but Reynolds grabbed me by the collar and rammed my head against the wall.
Now, be careful, black boy. Be careful. I heard you call him Peace, but if you say you didn't, you'd call me a liar. See this bar?
I tried to think of a neutral course that would resolve this fantastic nightmare, but my tongue couldn't find one.
I asked you a question, black boy. Answer.
I didn't remember calling you Mr. Peace.
You liar. You called me Peace then.
He slapped me till I bent sideways over the bench. Reynolds was on top of me.
Yeah, if you say you didn't, I'll rip your head loose with this bar. You call a white man a liar and get away with it. You can't do it.
Now I knew what they wanted. They wanted to keep me from learning the trade. They wanted me to leave the job, and I finally said, All right. I'll leave. For weeks after that, I felt I could not trust my feelings. My personality was numb. I could feel no hate for the men who had driven me away. They did not seem to be individuals, but part of a decaying system that I longed to attack, to grapple with. But my bank emotions spilled out around me. I went to bed tired, got up tired, and there was no one I wanted to talk to.
Richard, what's the matter, honey? There's no food in the house, son. What's happening to you? Other folks get along. You can, too.
Others did. And somehow I must. I'd force myself to fit in. I had to do it one way or the other.
Try the other way, buddy. You got nerve. I got a nice deal for you. I'll need a partner in my business.
Rodman, my childhood friend, who had served a stretch on the chain gang, was always after me to join him. No, nothing doing. I don't want to be no outlaw.
You're already an outlaw, kid. You was outlawed since the day you was born black. I've got a deal we can work together. Done, my way.
But I went looking for a way to get enough money to move. I ventured up to another optical company and someone snapped...
Take off your hat.
Oh, yes, sir.
What you want?
I wonder if you need a boy. I worked for an optical company a short while back on the other side of Jackson.
Why'd you leave?
I had a little trouble.
What'd you steal?
Nothing, sir. Would you like to check with Mr. Crane?
I'll check with Crane.
He checked with Crane. I was in luck. He said...
I'll take you on. You won't be learning no trade here. Against our policy. It'll be $10 a week.
$10. How long would it take me to save enough to go to Chicago on $10 a week? Could it be done?
It'll take a long, long time, Richard. But I'll wait. Just hold on, Ben. Just hold on.
I held on. Ran errands, washed eyeglasses that came from the rouge-smeared machines, took sacks to the post office for mailing, saved what was left of my money, and was... learning to contain the tension I felt in my relations with the dozen white men who worked in the shop. Learned to avoid the topics that southern white men did not like to discuss with Negroes, like the entire northern part of the United States, the Civil War, white women, Jews, communism, socialism, the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments, Jack Johnson. In fact, I found so many topics taboo that I took to reading and tried to enter the public library.
How long you been around Jackson, boy?
All my life, ma'am.
Then you know enough to know libraries for white folks, not black. Now be out before I call the guard, you impudent thing.
I went out, but my mind had been set aglow by the thought of the wealth between the book covers, and I wondered how I could get inside. I thought of the white men who worked in the shop. I ran over the merits of each man and settled on an old Irishman named Timothy Falk, whom the Southerners hated. And since they hated him, too, I felt he would hardly betray me.
Yeah. You want me to help you get books out of the library?
He looked at me suspiciously.
You're not trying to get me into trouble now, are you, lad?
Oh, no, sir.
Mm-hmm. What book will you be wanting?
Well, something by H.L. Mencken. I had said Mencken because the newspapers scorned him and called him a dangerous radical, and therefore I judged Mencken must be an honest man.
Yeah. You won't mention this to the other fellows, will you, though?
Not a word.
All right. Then here's me card. But be careful.
I took it. And at noon, I forged a note in Falk's handwriting and took it to the library.
Did Mr. Falk write this note for him?
Yes, ma'am.
What book for Mencken does he want?
I hadn't known there'd be more than one book by the author. I don't know, ma'am. The librarian looked suspicious. I wanted to run out of the door. Then she said...
Well, I don't know which one Mr. Falk wants, but I'll give you these two we have.
She went to the shelf, drew out two books, stamped them on my card, and I went out, not daring to look back. A block away, I opened them and read through the streets, dodging traffic, and at home that night I buried myself in my room. I saw the way the writer used words like weapons, and I wanted to use them too. I went back to the library again and again, and reading became a drug, and even at work the mood would not die. I had gotten a glimpse into the lives of other people, how they lived and died, and my world was becoming intolerable.
Wake up, boy.
Yes, sir.
Don't add to your brains with them books.
I'm just killing time, sir.
Well, don't let them ideas be the death of you. You can find something better to do.
They began to jibe me about my reading, but I continued. My tension returned now, more terrible, bitter, surging, almost too great to contain. I no longer felt that the world I lived in was hostile and killing. I knew it. A million times I asked myself, what could I do to save myself? Day by day, I went back on the grind and wondered how long I could bear washing glasses. And on one of those dull, monotonous days, when everyone seemed bored with his automatic task, Mr. Olin asked me,
Boy, how's it going?
Oh, fine, sir. He stood there watching me. What did he want?
Richard, you believe I'm your friend, don't you?
I knew that all Southern white men like to fancy themselves friends of Negroes. And while I fished for an answer that would say nothing, he continued.
I am a real friend of yours, boy.
I hope you are, sir.
I don't want you to get hurt. You don't deserve to get in no trouble, boy.
Have I done something that somebody doesn't like, sir? My mind swept frantically over my past actions, weighing them in the light of the way Southern white men thought Negroes should act.
Well, you know a colored boy named Harrison?
He was referring to a Negro boy about my own age who worked across the street for a rival company. Yes, sir, I know him.
Oh, be careful. Be careful, boy. He's after you.
Oh, I haven't done anything to Harrison. What?
You better watch him. A little while ago, I went to get a drink. Harrison was waiting for you at the door with a knife on his hand. Asked me when you was coming down. Said he was going to get you. Said you called him a dirty name. Now, we don't want no fighting or bloodshed on your boy.
I doubted Olin's story, yet perhaps. I said, I'll go and see this guy and talk to him.
No, boy. You better just let some of the white boys around here talk to him.
But, well, how'd this thing start in the first place?
He just told me he was going to get even with you. Going to cut you. Teach you a lesson. Now, don't worry, boy. You just let the white folks handle it. Just let the white folks handle it.
He patted my shoulder and went away. I was puzzled. Why would he joke? He was the boss of the factory. I'd always respected his word. I was upset. Harrison and I worked long, hard hours for the pennies we made, and we were edgy and tense. I decided to go directly to Harrison and see what was up. At noon, I went across the street and met Rodman.
In a hurry, buddy? Can't join me in a little deal I got for you? Easy money?
I'm in a hurry. Please, let me by. I avoided him. Went into a basement where I knew Harrison usually sat at lunch. He was sitting on a box, eating and reading a pulpwood magazine.
Say, Harrison, what's this thing all about, man?
What?
He ran his hand into his pocket and looked at me with cold, watchful eyes.
I haven't done anything to you.
Well, what you got against me?
Well, Mr. Olin said you came over to the factory looking for me with a knife. Said you was going to kill me with a knife as soon as you saw me. Said you was mad because I insulted you. But I ain't said nothing about you.
Man, I haven't said anything about you either.
That's funny. My boss gave me this knife to protect myself.
You going to cut me?
If you had cut me, I was going to cut you first. I ain't taking no chances.
You angry with me?
Man, I ain't mad at nobody.
I felt how close I had come to getting slashed. How little it mattered to the boss if one black boy killed another. After my lunch hour, I went back to the factory. Olin was waiting for me. His manner grave. His face serious.
Did you see that there Harrison black boy?
No, sir.
Well, he still has that knife for you.
Contempt and anger tightened in me, but I kept a dead face.
You ain't got yourself a knife yet, have you?
No, sir.
You got to protect yourself. Want to use mine?
Oh, no, sir.
You're a fool, boy. I thought you had some sense. You going to just let that boy cut out your heart? Over my dead body. His boss give him a knife to use again you? Take mine. Stop acting crazy.
I was afraid to look at him. If I had looked at him, I would have had to tell him to go to the devil. That I knew he was a liar and an enemy of mine and all mankind. And that I knew that if anyone had thrust a knife through my heart, he would have simply laughed. He had tossed his knife on the workbench. For a fleeting instant, I felt an urge to pick it up and plunge it into his heart. But I thought of my mother and of my dreams, and I picked up the knife, put it in my pocket.
You're acting like a black boy with some sense. You stab him before he gets a chance to stab you. You see it clear now?
I saw all too clear. I stole a few minutes to run across the streets to talk to Harrison. He was sullen, bashful, wanting to trust me, but afraid. He told me Olin had phoned his boss and reported I'd planned to waylay Harrison at 6 o'clock and stab him. We parted, vowing not to be influenced by the boss. But the egging kept on until Olin came to me with a pair of boxing gloves.
Now, see here, boy. If you're too cowardly to protect yourself, we arrange for you to fight him fair and square with gloves. We settle this grudge.
But I don't have no grudge.
It's all arranged. You just get up your nerve and we take care of everything. Just leave it to us.
And that evening, when I left the factory, I saw Harrison. He spoke haltingly, weighing his words.
They want us to fight 4 rounds, $5 apiece.
Man, I don't need $5 that bad.
I need it very much.
I don't want to fight for the bosses. I'd feel like a dog.
Well, if we don't, they'll think of something else. Look,
huh?
Let's fool them. We won't hurt each other. Just pretend we're fighting, huh?
All right. All right, I'll fight. Now there was great glee and excitement in the shops. And when the fight was set, I was ashamed of my agreement and wanted to back out.
Back out now? I see to it that you never get another job in Jackson as long as you live. Okay. Now strip and give us a show.
I was stripped to the waist, and gloves were tied to my hands. And in the basement, under the glare of the electric bulb, they brought out Harrison.
All right, now. Square off. Square off.
We squared off.
And I realized that neither I nor Harrison knew enough about boxing to pretend.
I lashed out timidly, landed. Harrison hit back, and the fight was on. I lashed out harder, and the harder I lashed, the harder Harrison fought. And against our wills, we were slugging. The shame and anger we felt for having been forced into the fight we put into our blows, and blood ran into our eyes until we were half blinded. The hate we felt for the whites went into our swings, and when we collapsed, they pulled us apart.
Thereafter, I could not look at Harrison. Thereafter, I hated him and hated myself. Thereafter, I felt I had done something for which I could never atone. Thereafter, I decided to stake all on a gamble.
Richard?
Yeah, Mama. Go on back to sleep, Mama.
What are you doing with that gun in your hand?
Ma, please, lie down.
Son,
Ma, will you let me alone? I'm going out. I went out and met Rodman on the corner.
You're a long time seeing the light, but you finally made it, Sonny.
What's the deal? What's the deal?
Keep cool, buddy. Keep cool. There's four in on this split. My agenda tonight goes like this. First, we pick up a car, anybody's 12-cylinder, make a call on a gas station, knock over Taylor's shop, and maybe, if your nerves are still high, buy an ice cream cone. Check your ride. You need it. Ought to be a wild night, buddy.
It was a wild night. It was the night I made enough to buy my ticket across the Mason-Dixon. When that night was over, when the split was made, I had enough money to take one passenger north and enough time to make it. I said goodbye to Mama, and then I went out the back way and walked a quarter of a mile to the railroad tracks. It began to rain as I tramped down the cross ties toward the train. I was headed north, full of the notion that life could be lived with dignity, and that the personalities of others should not be violated. True, I had lied. I had stolen. I had fought. And it was perhaps a mere accident that I had never killed. But in what other way had my native land allowed me to be natural, to be real, to be myself, except in rebellion and aggression? This was the culture from which I sprang. This was the terror from which I fled.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of Black Boy, the autobiography of Richard Wright. Today's script was adapted from the book of the same name, published by Harper and Brothers. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and is produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Richard Wright was played by Oscar Brown, Jr. Others in the cast were Janice Kingslow, Tony Parrish, Fred Pinkard, Jess Pugh, and Stud Terkel. The original music was written by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next week at this same time when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Dr. Howard Drew, inventor of the blood plasma system. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.